right in the thick of it with a fad, and you kind of look back now and go, what was I doing?
How did I spend this much on Pogs?
Yeah.
Pogs? Yeah. Do you remember Pogs?
Not really, but that's okay. I'll look them up. So 85058, we'll do attendances and we'll do fads as well. 85058.
The UK. And the home of the Premier League. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And good morning to you. It's 7 o'clock. It's Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton with you on 5 Live. A headline, a former manager of Fulham's women's team says the football club put extra precautions in place to protect players from the former owner, Mohamed Al-Fayed. Dozens of women who used to work for Mr. Al-Fayed at Harrods came forward in recent days to say they were sexually assaulted by him. Gotar Halganis has been speaking to our sports correspondent, Laura Scott.
He told me that members of staff became aware that the late billionaire liked young blonde girls and that as a result, players weren't allowed to be left alone with Al-Fayed. And we have heard from Fulham. They said that they're in the process of trying to establish whether anyone at the club was affected and have encouraged anyone to come forward.
The UN political affairs chief Rosemary DiCarlo has warned that the Middle East is at risk of a conflict that could dwarf the devastation witnessed in the region so far. He was speaking at a meeting of the Security Council about the deadly synchronized explosions of pagers and walkie-talkies in Lebanon earlier this month. Olivia Le Poix-Devan is head of news for Lebanon's independent English news service in Beirut. She told Weekend Breakfast things have escalated recently.
In the past few days, we've seen the war come to the everyday person, you know, seeing pagers explode in a fruit and veg shop, seeing a walkie-talkie having to be exploded by the army outside a university in central Beirut. This is no longer a conflict just kind of assigned to the south. This really does feel like it's happening everywhere, and that is why people are so concerned and frankly scared.
Labour delegates are gathering in Liverpool for the party's conference, which starts tomorrow. Ahead of it, Downing Street have announced Sir Keir Starmer and his most senior ministers will no longer accept donations to pay for their clothes. The Prime Minister had faced growing criticism after it emerged he had received more than £16,000 for work clothing and glasses, as well as further donations for his wife from the Labour peer, Lord Alley.
The DUP is holding its conference in Belfast. The party's new leader, Gavin Robinson, is expected to promise a new approach focused on bettering the lives of all people. The DUP lost 3 of their 8 MPs in the general election.
And 700 paratroopers will jump from planes over the Netherlands today to mark the 80th anniversary of one of the most daring operations of the Second World War. Operation Market Garden saw thousands of soldiers leap into Nazi-occupied territory near Arnhem in what would ultimately be a failed mission. James Greg's got our sports news this morning, and we've been talking about the biggest attendance that you've ever been a part of. We're getting some terrific texts on it, actually. And we're talking about the smallest as well. This is because the Joshua Dubois fight.
Yes.
We've got George Groves live on the programme, actually, who fought at Wembley.
Against Carl Froch.
Carl Froch was a hell of a fighter, wasn't
he? Yeah, brilliant, yeah. The Cobra.
I remember, actually, the punch that won that fight.
Yeah, it was a big... I mean, because they were two brilliant fighters, actually.
Really good at the time.
And actually, Groves, I think that was maybe his third attempt to try and to win the world title, the middleweight crown. And he finally won it years later. I think his seventh attempt, which was the most ever to try and win a world title. And that was great. And he's actually a really good guy, George Groves. But it was quite a nasty build-up. There was loads of, a genuine nastiness between him and Froch. I think, highly strong. The fighting at Wembley, thousands and thousands of people. Obviously, that was the biggest fight, I think.
There was about 83,000 for that.
That was, at the time, the biggest post-war
yeah, attendance. Exactly. So 96,000, they say, going to be this. We're asking for the biggest attendances that you have found yourself a part of. It doesn't just have to be sport. But we've had some really good ones. Laura in Nottingham. Hi, I was at the first inauguration of Barack Obama in Washington in 2009. Got up at 5 a.m, made it back to the hotel at 8 p.m. No access to food or toilets all day.
Oh.
You see how she's got that in as the first proper bit of commentary on the day. but it was amazing to be there, I'm sure. She says the estimate is that 1.8 million people were there. what the? But no one knows for sure. Everyone was in excellent spirits and it was a huge celebration, at times very moving.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these aren't sporty. So Catherine in Liverpool says, hi, Chris and Felicity. The biggest event I went to was 1.25 million in Phoenix Park, Dublin, to see Pope John Paul in 1979. Mm. These can be crowds for literally anything this morning. I want to hear.
They can, actually. And just this final one for now. Nigel in Cambridge went to see Dylan at Blackbush Airport in the late 70s, along with 250,000 others.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. From where we were standing, he was about the size of my little fingernail, which, you know, it's all right, though, isn't it? It's just being there.
Being there.
Part of it.
Correct.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? Right, so 850-58, let us know. We've got smallest crowds as well, and some of those are quite good. So we're doing from top to bottom, either which way you want
to
go.
We don't want your medium crowds. You no. keep those. Yeah. We're not interested.
Well, you know what? Saying that, I think this 96,000... off the back of those texts, does feel a bit medium-sized, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Can you start saying only 96,000 when you're talking about this?
I can do
a
that.
A mere...
I'll do that in just a second.
Purely a radio device. That's all it is. Simply all it is. Right, go on then, what's happening?
There was a big relief for Sonia Bonpastore as her Chelsea team started the new Women's Super League season. Last night, with a win, they narrowly beat Aston Villa at Kings Meadow. A 0-0 sees them off to a very nice start in that post-Emma Hayes era. Hull got their first win of the season in the Championship last night. They beat Stoke 3-1 away from home. It is the final weekend this season as well in Super League. Hull KR will finish second to Wigan, so they're playing a home semi-final in the knockout stages. They beat Leeds Rhinos, who themselves miss out on the knockout stages. Warrington end the season third. They thumped London Broncos 54-0, and Lee won a nail-biter against Saints. Both sides made it through to the knockouts for them. So the postseason starts next weekend. A weigh-in for that all-British heavyweight title fight between Anthony Joshua and champion Daniel Dubois took place in Trafalgar Square yesterday evening. Joshua has quashed any suggestion at all of him nearing the end of his career. He did weigh in heaviest. There is live commentary on 5 Live of that tonight. Just 96,000 in there at Wembley. The biggest post-war attendance for a boxing match, of course. Rugby Union, the PGA Golf Championship at Wentworth as well, and the Singapore Grand Prix, all to be boxed off here on 5 Live Saturday Breakfast. Good morning.
BBC Radio 5 Live, the voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Saturday Breakfast. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Morning. So, as James was saying, some interesting games in the Premier League, which we'll chew over in due course. Everton against Leicester, Liverpool against Bournemouth. Liverpool very impressive in the Champions League during the week against AC Milan, weren't they, at the San Siro. We may start looking ahead to City against Arsenal, because it's going to be such a big game. Spurs, Brentford as well. Spurs need some more points on the board, you would have thought, at this stage. I mean, it's early days, isn't it? Come on. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the boxing. George Grove's going to be live on the programme. And they've caught this capybara.
Yes. Capybara. And now I have to say it on the radio. Capybara.
Capybara. Capybara. Yeah.
I'll say it quickly. And
it was sort of on the outskirts of Telford, wasn't it? And
apparently living its best life.
Having a good old time.
Yeah.
Cinnamon. They've caught it.
Her.
They've caught her. Yes. Quite right, actually.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, but
you're spot on.
She's back home. One-year-old Cinnamon. I have been
only
following
one.
This.
Only
yeah,
one
she's just
old.
A baby capybara.
I don't know how long do capybaras live for?
I don't know. How long do guinea pigs live for? And just sort of make it bigger. That's it, isn't
well,
it?
Well, no, but a guinea pig's a rodent?
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
She said with confidence on national radio. Like, yeah.
Capybaras are the world's biggest rodents. I know that much. I mean, you're probably right. I've got to let this up.
Right.
But I mean, you're almost
it's a rodent.
It's got to be. Wait, what else is it going
to
be?
They can live up to 10 years in the wild, 12 years in captivity.
Which?
Capybaras.
Capybara. Yeah. Oh, right. Well, it really is a baby.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. We'll get into all of this. And we'll also talk about some of the politics that's around today, whether it's Labour Party making a U-turn on clothes donations to the Prime Minister, to the Chancellor, to the Deputy Prime Minister as well. And we'll touch on the Reform Conference, which is happening this weekend.
We will. We're also going to talk a bit about cinema, because to celebrate 85 years of Batman, lots of cinemas in the UK are going to show just a lot of the different Batman films, so from Dark Knight to, you know, The various films that have come out. And we're going to be talking a little bit about why cinemas are kind of revisiting the old stuff, whether it's nostalgia or whether it's just because, let's face it, there aren't as many films out. We had a writer's strike and now they're just doing their best to stay in business. So we're going to chat about that. chat about films generally. But, of course, we start today with the Middle East, where fears are growing of an all-out war between Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. Yesterday, Israel killed a senior Hezbollah commander in an airstrike in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. The group confirmed that Ibrahim Akil was among at least 14 people killed.
Well, earlier this week, as you know, more than 30 people were killed, thousands injured when pagers and walkie-talkies belonging to Hezbollah members exploded. Israel hasn't commented on the attacks. It's believed the intention was to weaken the Iranian-backed group, of course, which has been firing rockets from Lebanon since Hamas attacked southern Israel last October, displacing tens of thousands of people from their homes.
Now, earlier in the show, we spoke to Olivia Poir-Devan, who's head of news for Lebanon's independent English news service in Beirut. She explained that Lebanon's threadbare infrastructure is simply struggling to cope with the latest attacks.
Right now, it really is the definition of a living nightmare for Beirut because of the breadth, scope and sophistication of these attacks, but also the intensity, which is putting enormous pressure on not only the psyches of the Lebanese population, but also the hospitals and all the resources of the country, a country of which, by the way, is in deep crisis ever since the 2019 economic crisis. It doesn't even have a proper government. It's a caretaker government here. So this really is a very, very difficult time.
Well, let's speak to our Middle East correspondent, Hugo Bechega. Hugo, morning.
Good morning.
This is a really fast developing story. Every time you think you've caught up on it, something else happens. What's the latest this morning?
Yeah, I think, we're seeing a major escalation in this conflict between Hezbollah and Israel. And, the last few days have been humiliating for Hezbollah. I was in Tahrir yesterday near the site of this Israeli airstrike. And, you could feel the tension. I mean, Hezbollah members were obviously nervous, but some of them looked incredulous because this attack happened in their stronghold here in Beirut, a place that many people considered to be safe, and it isn't.
Sounds
explosion. So this airstrike, there was a missile. Those people were meeting underground, and this missile destroyed this underground room where they were meeting, and an entire building collapsed. So there is a sense here, people tell us, that nobody knows what is going to happen, and everything is possible.
And as Olivia was saying earlier on, that underground attack showing the vulnerability. Hugo Bechega, thank you so much for being with us. Let's talk to Francis Guy, who was UK ambassador in Lebanon between 2006 and 2011. Francis, morning.
Good morning.
Just an absolutely astonishing series of events in Lebanon. What's your reaction to what we've seen over the last week?
Yeah, I agree. But I think what we've seen is a continued acceleration of Israel's intent to bring the war to Lebanon, unfortunately. It's starting perhaps with that attack in at the end of July against another of Hezbollah commander, which had already shown that the Dahiyah wasn't safe, actually. So there's already been an attack in the southern suburbs of Beirut. And since then, there's been a kind of constant push, constant more airstrikes in the south, and then this very terrifying attack using the pagers and the walkie-talkies. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's like Israel's pushing Hezbollah to respond, and so far, since October the 8th last year, Hezbollah has more or less been trying to target Israeli military targets. So it's like they're pushing them to respond to something else, which leaves Hezbollah in a very difficult place between just absorbing that and watching more and more destruction in Lebanon, or perhaps replying more forcefully, but then leading, as you've been saying, the whole region, or at least Lebanon and more of Israel, into a wider war, which will be of benefit to nobody.
Well, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? You'd think that both countries would have their hands quite full at the moment with everything else that's going on, and Israel with its activity in Gaza. Hezbollah, a political party and a military force that's been hugely affected, though, by the last week. So it's lost its senior commander, and it's also had that attack against so many of its people through the pagers and the walkie-talkies. Does that make it more or less dangerous?
makes it very difficult for Hezbollah, I guess. I mean, it's hard to know whether it makes it more or less dangerous. It could make it more dangerous, because if you take out top leadership of any organization, then you're left with less experienced people making decisions. So, and it hasn't removed, although the Israelis have been heavily bombarding missile sites over the last few days as well, so they are taking out Hezbollah's ability to respond. Nevertheless, Hezbollah will have plenty of means of responding. So no, I think it makes it more dangerous, actually.
One UN spokesperson said the region is on the brink of a catastrophe. Is that your view?
I think it's already in a catastrophe. If you're a displaced Gazan who's been displaced out of their house for more than 15 times and is living in a tent that's being bombed, I think that's already a catastrophe. And I think it's a failure of the international community that we're nearly 1 year on and that's still going on.
I mean, you talked about how an all-out conflict in the area, it wouldn't be good for anyone. Is it something that Hezbollah wants, or would they want peace? Like, would they want to be able to negotiate out of this?
As they've been quite cautious in some ways so far, the signs would be that they haven't wanted to escalate it, and that if you think that behind them is Iran, who's calculating them as part of this, they also have not wanted to escalate it, because it's not in their interest. It's in their interest to keep a pressure on. It's not in their interest to end up in an all-out conflict. So they don't want it, but if you are endlessly being attacked, then there may come some point where you respond, unfortunately.
Now, the UN Security Council met on Friday. Can they have any influence on this? Can they negotiate a peace?
I think that, as I said, unfortunately, that's what we've seen over the last year, a failure of the UN to influence events. There was a UN Security Council resolution in June on the ceasefire in Gaza. It changed absolutely nothing on the ground. The positive on Lebanon is that there was a Security Council resolution 1701 at the end of the war in 2006, which basically kept some kind of peace since then. So the Lebanese and the people in northern Israel have lived in relative peace for the last 17 years. Both sides have contravened that resolution. But nevertheless, more or less, it has held. So it does show that it's possible, but we don't seem to have the political will at the moment, unfortunately.
Well, we will be staying across this story here at Five Live. But Francis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Francis Guy there, who was UK ambassador in Lebanon in the past. Right, it is 17 minutes past 7.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Mikel Arteta to Arsenal is confirmed.
We were sad when he leaves. He's a ball for beyond a good manager.
Arsenal have confirmed the signing of Declan Rice.
Manchester City have agreed a deal to sign Erling Haaland.
Champions again. They've won it 4 years running.
I think Arsenal get even closer again.
Their level is higher and higher.
Five Live Premier League Sunday.
Welcome to you, Manchester City against Arsenal.
Listen, Sunday from 12 on Five Live and BBC Sounds.
Good morning. It is Felicity Hanna and Chris Warburton with you. It's Five Live Breakfast. I know regulars and listeners will know that I do say rather daft things from time to time.
Alongside your insightful things. It's a charming blend.
There is that too. I don't know why I was questioning whether a guinea pig is a rodent or not. What else could it be?
Amphibian.
What else could it possibly be? Why was I even posing the question? Of course it's a rodent.
Asking the hard questions here on Five Live.
I have been looking at other brands of guinea pig though. The Teddy guinea pig, the Abyssinian guinea pig, the Peruvian guinea pig. They eat them in Peru. I went to Peru years ago. It's the main national speciality of Peru.
I think that there was a whole thing, wasn't there? They used to take them on ships as meat, but then get really attached to them because they're just so cute.
Was that the thing? You'd have thought they would have learnt their lesson after like the first time that happened. Yeah. Right, this time
definitely going to eat this.
Do not get too close to Tiddles.
And they make
that's a cat name, isn't it? But anyway,
they make such cute noises as well. Like you can see, you know, they make little sort of computer game noises, don't they? I wonder if capybaras make bigger cute little squeaky noise. We've got a guest on this in a bit, and I'm going to ask the hard questions about capybaras that you want to know.
Just got to remember them because they are good. just crowds very quickly. The biggest attendances you've been a part of. My biggest attendance was Louisiana State University versus Alabama College Football at LSU 2022, 102,321 at the Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. Quite an experience. So that sounds great.
That does sound great. Is it too soon to do some of the smallest attendances?
No.
Because I love these as well. So Tony says, saw early Clash. Oh, Tony. In a Birmingham nightclub, attendance 5 people. We all got together around one table and made friends. I can't remember them being very good, but maybe just not motivated. Tony, I would have completely spun that story differently over the years. I was there for that first early gig. They're amazing. I saw their genius. But
yeah,
no.
I like
Tony
his honesty.
They weren't very good.
So 85058, biggest, smallest, just nothing in between. That's basically it, isn't it? So 20 minutes past 7, strap yourselves in. Premier League football weekend, and we've got some good ones. 5 Live's going to bring you 4 games over the next 2 days.
Yes, tomorrow it's Brighton v Forest at 2 p.m. before last season's top 2, Manchester City and Arsenal, meet at the Etihad. You can follow all the action, of course, here on 5 Live and via the BBC Sounds app.
This afternoon we've got commentary of Liverpool's home game against Bournemouth from 3, Manchester United strip to Crystal Palace at 5:45, and of course we'll be round the grounds from 3 o'clock this afternoon. The latest from all the games, including the early relegation 6-pointer between Leicester and Everton. Earlier we spoke to Everton fan Warren Doyle from the Blue Room podcast.
One of these days we will be talking positively about Everton. We haven't made the greatest of starts, no, by any stretch of the imagination. I watched the Villa game last week as well, 2-0 up against a very good Villa side. They've done well to a degree to get to this point, but there was just an inevitability about it, Chris. You just felt that there was a bit of a mental scar in there.
Yeah, there's obviously a bit of psychological stuff going on here as well, isn't there, for Everton at the moment. Sports writer and broadcaster Vishali Bardwaj joins us. Hello, Vishali.
Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you. We'll park Everton for just a second because we had a chat with Warren. Quite a few texts from listeners going, oh, we're always going on about Everton. But let's just focus on Leicester for a second because it's a big game for them as well, isn't it? 2 points in 12 for Leicester. However, they do seem to be building game on game, it feels.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I was at their match last weekend at Selhurst Park against Crystal Palace, a game in which they were leading 2-0 before eventually going on to draw it 2-2. And I know Steve Cooper, even this week in the build-up to this game against Everton, he hasn't been happy, has he, about one of the goals. He's been going on about that. But there were plenty of positives to take away from that match. You talk about building. It does seem like, with all of the change in terms of the squad, of course, in terms of being promoted back into the Premier League, you're starting to see that collective kind of gelling together, as it were. Last weekend after the game, actually, I spoke to Wilfred Ndidi, and he said, look, it does feel like a loss, but there are plenty of positives. And I think if you're thinking about it, the fact that Jamie Vardy keeps on scoring, yeah, we saw that last weekend. Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't slow down. Wilfred Ndidi himself, 2 assists in that match. Steffi Mavididi, they've got plenty of good players. I think the positive from last weekend was the way that they took their 2 goals. Obviously slightly concerning with the way that they conceded the 2 goals as well. But they do look like they could well get their first win of the season very soon. Now, they'll be thinking that today's a perfect day. If we've heard that interview with the Everton fan, because Everton still looking for the first win of the season. Yeah. Look, they've lost all 4 of their games and the pressure is really piling on the team. I mean, they've had 2 games this season already where they've been leading 2-0 and they've gone on to lose those games. Yeah. So they were knocked out of the cup in midweek on penalties as well. So this is going to be a huge match for both teams. But I think for Everton, it must have to be a must win.
Jamie Vardy, you're right, 176 goals he's now scored for Leicester in 409 appearances. It's a pretty amazing return, isn't it? Spurs. What are we to make of Spurs so far? 4 points after 4 league matches. They've got Brentford today. Brentford are never straightforward. They've started the season really pretty well, haven't they? And I guess the worry for Spurs fans at the moment, at this stage of the season, is just not being clinical or creative enough in the final third, as they have previously been under Ange.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you just hit the nail on the head there. They've taken their lowest tally of points since 2015-2016, 4 points from four games. Of course, they've lost their last two in the Premier League as well. And of course, in midweek, they came so close to being knocked out of the League Cup by Coventry. But I think the issue really is, and I've been to a couple of the games this season. I covered them a lot last season as well. It is just they're not clinical enough. They're not scoring enough goals, and they're not converting the possession that they have, because they're the team with the highest possession in the whole of the Premier League so far this season. They're not converting that into enough points. I don't think there's too much to be worried about. I think the interesting thing from my point of view is whether or not that win against Coventry, the nature of it being so last minute, that fighting spirit we saw, which we saw, you know, on a number of occasions last season, particularly at home, when they came from behind, for example, to beat the likes of Brighton, Crystal Palace, Luton. We saw that against Coventry. Can that now be a turning point for them this season? Ange Postecoglou, he said, look, we haven't really seen that this season. I'm hoping we can see more of it this season. They've got plenty of attacking talent. There's no doubting that. I think it's just those sort of moments when they're caught on the counter or, as we saw against Arsenal, when they concede a goal from a set piece. But you mentioned Brentford. They, of course, won't have Johan Wisser available in attack. And that is a huge loss for them, because he has had such a great start to the season. But you mentioned them being tricky customers. Well, last season, this game ended 3-2 to Spurs. Brentford had been leading in that match, and there was all sorts of wind-up moments going on there with Neil Mope there. Of course, he's not there anymore. But I think this is going to be some London derby.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've got a Midlands derby as well. Villa against Wolves later. Fulham against Newcastle. And also Southampton against Ipswich. And Liverpool against Bournemouth. Liverpool, you know, bouncing back after that defeat against Forest. And I don't know, it's funny what just a few days can do, isn't it, in a way? Because they were so wasteful in that game against Forest, weren't they? But really good, actually, at the San Siro. I thought it was a really good performance. You can't underestimate what it takes to get to Milan and perform like that, can you, at the San Siro? But at the same time, Bournemouth threw a fairly awkward team at times.
Yeah, I mean, I think only Brighton and Man City have had more shots this season than Bournemouth. And we saw last weekend, if that penalty goes in against Chelsea at home, maybe they go on to win that game and they don't lose it. So they have had a really, I think, a decent start to the season. They can be tricky customers as well. But if you're thinking about Liverpool, you mentioned it there. Yes, they lost to Nottingham Forest last weekend, with the only goal they've conceded so far in the Premier League, because they have had a good start to life under Arne Slot. But they went to the San Siro, and they really made the most of set pieces. That's what we saw really in midweek. And I think Mohamed Salah hitting the woodwork a couple of times, not scoring last weekend as well. I think he's going to be raring to go. But I think Liverpool will still be favourites. I think they're still showing really good signs of development under the new manager. But they will be without Alisson for today's game, and that's going to be a blow. Having said that, Quibin Kelleher, who we know wants to play more, he's a very good deputy in goal. So I think Liverpool will still be huge favourites.
Okay. Vishali, nice talking to you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you.
Yeah. Sports writer and broadcaster Vishali Barbwaj. Busy day on Five Live, actually, when it comes to the football. We will have commentary of that match, as I said, the Liverpool game against Brentford. Four games over the next 2 days. Liverpool against Bournemouth, from 3 o'clock this afternoon. And just to mark your card for tomorrow, just to get in early, we do have the Manchester City Arsenal game. Commentary from the Etihad as part of Premier League Sunday kickoff for that at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon. It's 7:28.
And this is the story that we didn't know we needed this week, but it's been a good one. A nail-biting story. A week-long search for an escaped capybara in Telford has ended in success. The massive rodent is called Cinnamon. She made headlines for foiling the huge efforts to recapture her. Last night, she was finally back at home at the Hoo Zoo and Dinosaur World. Let's talk to Will Dorrell, who's the zoo's owner. Will, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I bet you were glad it wasn't one of the dinosaurs got out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Although there is a whole film franchise that would have shown us what to do, so that might have helped.
I would like the remake, but with just massive guinea pig animal capybara things. Right, Cinnamon is home. She's back with her brother, Churro. Do all your capybaras have food-themed names?
No, the other two have South American theme names, Chimu and Chincha, which I've got no idea what they mean, but the staff assure me that they mean something in South American.
Very dignified names, I'm sure. Right, okay. a few sleepless nights for you this week. Tell me when you first realised you were out counting your capybaras and thought, hang on, we're missing one.
Well, it all happened very, very quickly last Friday, so just over a week ago now. One of our keepers went in to mow our capybara enclosure, and suddenly he saw Cinnamon sneak straight past the side of the tractor and out through the gate in the short period of time that the gate was open. So we realised very, very quickly, but she foiled our attempts to recapture her at that point and then managed to get outside of the zoo perimeter into some woodland that we own just adjacent to us.
Now, I've spent some time chasing a hamster that escaped around my downstairs, so I know how fast they can move. How fast can a capybara move? Like, were you legging it after her, or was she just sneaky?
Well, she's a bit of both. But yeah, when she really gets going, they can move around about 20 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, if they really decide, only in short bursts, but if they really decide to go, then you're going to struggle to capture her. It's probably for that reason that we ended up having success capturing when she was actually swimming in a pond. And we could obviously resist where she was going a little bit better.
Where was the pond? Was this in the woodland? This wasn't someone's garden.
No, it's a wild pond that we have in our woodland. So we have a section of woodland that next to the zoo that is set aside for British conservation, not for capybara conservation.
So she didn't stray very far there. I mean, did she have the opportunity? Can you get out of that woodland easy enough?
You can, yeah. I mean, actually, if you drew a line from her habitat to that pond, it's less than 250 metres. So right. She really didn't go very far. But right next to us, there's an open boundary through into the MOD. And we were concerned that she might have moved into MOD Donington, which would have made things a lot more difficult, as you could probably imagine.
But this story had everything. Although I'm kind of sad it wasn't in someone's pond. Like, Sandra,
yeah,
there's
exactly.
A massive guinea pig in the garden. Tell me then about the capture. Was she pleased to see you? Are they friendly? Was she sort of running to or swimming towards you?
I think she is relatively friendly, but at the same time, obviously, if everything completely out of context, she was obviously a bit spooked. She'd been, you know, on the run for a week, and even though she's nice and fit and healthy, and you know, obviously I've been quoted saying she was living her best life because over there there's loads of food and water and ideal, she understandably was a little bit scared about what was going on. So she was probably more shocked to see us than anything else. It's actually several of us ended up in the pond with her, which was, not ideal.
Can I just start, and don't take this the wrong way, but
that's right.
If she was only 250 metres away, how did it take a week to find her?
He's got a point.
Yeah, he's got a very good point. Well, the issue was the undergrowth around there. The undergrowth is really, really thick. So there's areas of undergrowth where we're sort of talking 10 metres thick brambles that are sort of 6 foot high.
Right.
And she can move underneath them, and that's what she was doing. So, you know, obviously there's all the thermal drone footage that we got and stuff like that, where we could see her under these brambles, but we physically couldn't get to her. And that was the issue. And what we didn't want to do was go in, you know, all guns blazing and potentially force her to flee over that boundary into the MOD. So we had to be very, very careful and slow about
gotcha.
It. That was what took the time.
Tension, technology, a heartwarming ending. Will, I think she is the most...
No, go on. You were wondering what noise they make.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering if they do make, you know, guinea pigs make that kind of doo-doo-doo noise, which I've now made myself. do capybaras do that?
Firstly, fantastic impression. Secondly, they do. It's a lot louder.
Do an impression.
Can you do it, Will?
Squeak, squeak, squeak.
No, terrible.
it's not in my repertoire, I'm afraid. But they also do a bark as well. So when they're scared, they'll do like a loud bark, a little bit like a dog.
Oh, really? So
they have that as well.
Well, we're very glad to hear that Cinnamon is home safe. Will Dorrell from Who Zoo and Dinosaur World, thank you.
Thank you very much.
It is 33.
The bark is quite a revelation, isn't it?
I'm going on YouTube.
If you do that in reverse, if you were sort of talking about a capybara having a louder guinea pig squeak,
yes.
If you went in reverse, could a rat or a guinea pig have a low level bark? Do you know what I mean?
Rats make some brilliant noises, but we can't get into that because it's 7:33.
Okay.
We should have the news.
Okay.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And Here are your headlines this morning. A former manager of Fulham's women's football team says extra precautions were put in place to protect players from the club's late owner, Mohamed Al-Fayed. More than 20 former employees of Harrods, which the billionaire also owned, have accused him of sexually assaulting them while the store was under his ownership.
A senior United Nations official has warned that the Middle East is at risk of a conflict that could far exceed the destruction already seen in the region. The UN political affairs chief, Rosemary DiCarlo, was addressing a meeting of the Security Council after Hezbollah members were killed by exploding pagers and radios in Lebanon.
A death row inmate has been executed in the US state of South Carolina just days after the key witness for the prosecution claimed he was innocent. Freddie Owens had been convicted of killing a shop worker during an armed robbery in 1997.
And you'll never guess what?
What?
A week-long search for an escaped capybara in Shropshire has ended in success. The large rodent called Simba, I need to read this, we've literally just spoken to the boat, had evaded zoo staff for days.
250 metres away.
We would actually add to it. It's now safely back in her enclosure. I wonder if she'll ever remember those days, this week. I don't know what the...
I don't know much about a capybara's long-term memory.
In a couple of years, she'll be like, oh, do you remember when I got in the undergrowth and...
Maybe she'll do it again.
Swimming in that pond.
Just keep going for it. You know at the safari park where like you drive through the baboons and there are people kind of waiting and their job is to get the baboons off your car before you drive out. That's like a fun
job.
We
did that. We did that once. And I sort of regretted it immediately when you go into that bit.
We don't go through it anymore. I want to get this car through.
The windscreen wipers, they're gone, aren't they?
I love it.
They are gone.
But if you go on the outside, you can look in and you can just see people in there, like brand new BMWs and Discoveries and things, having bits ripped off and
battered.
Looking.
Yeah, it's exactly wonderful.
That's my sport.
It is. You're right. Let's get the sport. Here's James. Morning.
Good morning to you once again. A new dawn. It does feel a little weird talking about the Women's Super League without Emma Hayes, but Chelsea have opened that new era under Sonia Bompastor with a win. The curtain and razor of that new season saw them pick up a 1-0 win at King's Meadow over Aston Villa.
Feels great for sure. We wanted to start strongly, getting 3 points, that's a good way to start. We should have scored maybe 2 more goals, especially in the first half, but I think we just showed our mentality on being able to be together and defend our goal.
2 more fixtures today, early games as well, so we'll update you in 5 Live Sport from midday. Should also just talk about this last night, Motherwell reaching the Scottish League Cup semi-finals for the first time in 6 years as Lennon Miller's stoppage time penalty knocked out Dundee United. He's only 18, but he showed no signs whatsoever of any nerves as he put his side through to the last 4.
Do what you do in training every day. You take penalties every day after training and you back yourself, so... No, I was confident ever since the penalty got awarded that I was taking it and I knew that I was going to score and I backed myself.
He did, and what a moment. It was a bad start for the new Stoke City manager, Narcis Pelac, as his side lost 3-1 at home to Hull City in the Championship. 3 goals in 16 second half minutes turned the game on its head. The win is Hull's first of the season. In 5 Live Sport, we have updates of West Ham versus Chelsea. That one kicks off at 12:30. The 3 o'clock commentary base is Liverpool versus Bournemouth. And then our 5:30 kickoff comes from Selhurst Park as Manchester United go to Crystal Palace. United's Marcus Rashford appears to be playing his way back into a bit of form, doesn't he? After a difficult end to last season, he scored 3 across his last 2 matches and manager Erik ten Hag is happy to see it.
Not any football career is only the way up. It's also called the way down and you have to deal with it. Marcus Rashford is also experienced, so he knows when there are setbacks, how to fight back, how to set his career, how to set his performance. So he took control of it and I think he's on the way back. And now he has to continue and to progress.
Anthony Joshua, meanwhile, says he feels like a gladiator ready to perform for the people after the weigh-in for the all-British heavyweight title fight against champion Daniel Dubois. Joshua weighed in at 18 stone with Dubois a few pounds less at 17.10. That's still the heaviest that he's been, by the way. A post-war record crowd of 96,000 fans are expected to pack out Wembley Stadium later. Former 3-time world champion of the heavyweight division, Lennox Lewis, is excited by what tonight will bring.
It's 2 British fighters that are good that they pack a punch. Both guys are knockout artists and when they punch with their right hands, people fall.
We've got commentary here on 5 Live with the team later on. 8:30 is when the build-up will get going. 10:30, I reckon, is when that ring walk will be for both of those two fighters. The new Rugby Union Premiership season started yesterday, I should say, but today we've got Exeter hosting Leicester. Saracens and new captain Mario Itoje travel to Gloucester. The action, however, got underway last night with a repeat of last year's final. Bath taking on the champions Northampton Saints, and they've got some revenge as well for losing that final with a 38-16 win in front of their home fans at the Rec. It was a great atmosphere. Here's Ollie Lawrence, a try scorer last night, who did let his mind wander back a little to Twickenham in May.
We didn't touch on it too much, but we definitely in the back of the minds that we probably owed ourselves one. I mean, the final's not played in September, but yeah, to have them back at home after everything happened last year, it was start of a new chapter for us.
Wales women have their first win over Australia in 7 attempts. Kate Williams crashed over with the last move of the match to secure a 31-24 win at Rodney Parade in Newport last night. And it's the final weekend of the regular season in Super League. Hull KR will finish second to Wigan. So a home semi-final in the playoffs for them after they beat Leeds last night, who miss out themselves, actually, Leeds Rhinos. Warrington end the season third after they beat the London Broncos. Lee got past St Helens 18-12. Both sides there made it through to the knockouts.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
It's Weekend Breakfast. It's Chris and Fliss. And now it's the weather with Simon King.
Good morning. Just like yesterday, we're going to see some pretty intense downpours and thunderstorms developing across southern England, through the Midlands into Wales, perhaps one or two coming into the east of England as well into the afternoon. Now, like yesterday, these showers will be hit and miss, so not everybody's going to see them. But in the worst of the showers, there'll be a lot of rainfall falling in a short space of time. That could lead to some flash flooding. There'll also be some frequent lightning, some hail and some gusty winds all to go with that as well. Well, we've already got some showers moving into central southern parts of England, but they'll become a bit more widespread as we go through the afternoon. Away from those showers, there'll be some sunny spells developing, but further north across England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, we've got some cloud affecting parts of northeast England, eastern Scotland, central Scotland in particular. A lot of that cloud may just stick around along the North Sea coasts this afternoon, perhaps the central belt as well, but elsewhere there'll be a few sunny spells developing. And maximum temperatures today getting up to about 18 to 21 degrees in northern parts and about 18 to 23 Celsius further south. Simon King, 5 Live weather.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
Saturday Breakfast. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good morning, it's Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton with you on 5 Live. Now, members of Reform are in Birmingham for their first party conference since their breakthrough at this year's general election when they won 5 seats. Party leader Nigel Farage spoke at the conference yesterday. He congratulated party members on their success but said that Reform had to change if it wanted to keep growing.
We're recruiting right now to get full-time regional managers and regional organisers. So I feel that my promise to professionalise the party is now on track. I also promise you that in future we will be vetting candidates rigorously at all levels. I promise you that. We haven't got time, we haven't got room for a few extremists to wreck the work of a party that now has 80,000 members and rising by hundreds every single day. Amazing. But it's on the democratisation of the party where perhaps I've been the most criticised, although, having said that, I'm quite used to being criticised with virtually everything. Any major terrible event that happens in the country is clearly my fault. Lucky I don't care, isn't it, really? They can write what they like. I don't care, because I know what I believe in. Now, I set this up as a limited company guaranteed by shares, and I owned 60% of the shares. Now, I could make a joke and say that it led to streamlined decision-making. But I did it for two reasons. One, we had no time. no time to get established, and it needed somebody of experience to make decisions, right or wrong, and that structure allowed me to do that. But secondly, I did it because new or nascent political parties are vulnerable to being hijacked by extremist groups and bad actors. And all the while I had control of it, that could never happen. That could never happen. Because we don't want extremists. We don't want bigots. We don't want people who think that way, because we represent the silent, decent majority of this great country that we live in.
So that was Nigel Farage speaking last night. We did ask Reform if we could interview one of their representatives on today's show, as we do with all of the party conferences, of course. I was interviewing one of the members of the Liberal Democrats last weekend, interviewed a member of the Greens the weekend before. But as was the case with Reform, the party weren't able to provide anyone this morning. So you heard that speech, a bit of that speech from Nigel Farage instead. Right, it's 7:45 now.
Now, a former manager of Fulham's women's football team has told the BBC that the club put measures in place to protect players from the club's then owner, the late billionaire Mohamed Al-Fayed. The club has encouraged anyone affected by abuse during his 16-year ownership of Fulham to go to the police. Lawyers representing the former Harrods staff, who say they were abused by Mr. Al-Fayed while he owned the luxury department store, have described him as a sexual predator. One barrister, Dean Armstrong, said it was time Harrods took responsibility.
Mohamed Al-Fayed was a monster. He was a monster. But he was a monster enabled by a system that pervaded Harrods. I have many years of practice, and I have never seen a case as horrific as this.
The current owners say they're utterly appalled by the allegations. Let's talk now to our reporter, Simon Jones, who has more on the story. Simon, morning.
Morning.
I mean, this is if you get a big story like this, you get a big case like this, more women tend to come forward, more victims tend to come forward. And we've seen that following the BBC documentary, haven't we?
Yeah, at the news conference, which was held in London yesterday, the lawyers who are representing some of the people who said they were abused by Mohamed Al-Fayed said around 100 people have come forward. Now, the late Harrods owner was described as a sexual predator who assaulted staff and threatened them over a 25-year period. One of the women spoke at that conference and she said when she worked for Al-Fayed, she was 19, she described him as someone who preyed on the most vulnerable. She said that he subjected her to a forced kiss. He made her sit on his lap so he could explore her body. And when she objected, he threatened her, saying he knew where she and her family lived and she would never work in London again if she spoke out. And lawyers said underneath the glitz and glamour of the Harrods brand, there was a toxic, unsafe and abusive environment. Harrods, for its part, has told us that the Harrods of today is a very different organisation from the one owned and controlled by Mohamed Al-Fayed between 1985 and 2010. The department store's new owners have a compensation scheme for ex-employees who say they're attacked by Al-Fayed, and Harrods, it's believed, has already reached financial settlements with the majority of people who've approached them since 2023. And they've also, Harrods, have received new inquiries this week following that BBC documentary.
Simon, thank you very much. Simon Jones with the latest. Now, in terms of Fulham, in response to this story, they referred to their earlier statement, which said, "We're deeply troubled and concerned to learn of the disturbing reports following yesterday's documentary. We have sincere empathy for the women who've shared their experiences. We're in the process of establishing whether anyone at the club is or has been affected." And this is important. They say, "Should any person wish to share information or experiences relating to these allegations, we encourage them to contact the club at safeguarding@fulhamfc.com, safeguarding@fulhamfc.com, or contact the police." So that is the latest on that. Right, it is 7:48.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. Well, this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV licence uni.
Big fight tonight. Anthony Joshua, Daniel Dubois will contest the IBF heavyweight world title at Wembley Stadium. It's expected 96,000 fans will be in attendance. It'll be the biggest post-war British boxing crowd ever. Coverage beginning on the BBC Sport website with commentary of the undercard fight as well, which should be a good one. Josh Warrington's fight against Anthony Carsezi. Then on to Five Sports Extra and BBC Sounds from 7 o'clock before switching to Five Live and BBC Sounds from 8:30.
Now, Joshua is aiming to become a three-time world champion, while Dubois is technically the defending champion after Alexander Usyk's decision to vacate the title following his win over Tyson Fury in May. That meant Dubois was upgraded from interim champion to full champion status. In a moment, you'll hear from Dubois. But first, here's Joshua, who's ready and focused ahead of tonight's big fight.
I can make him better than he is due to the fact that I don't perform to my full capability. You don't only go in for physical preparation. If you're doing that, then you're probably going to get beat because Everyone comes physically prepared. So mentally, I know where I'm at and I know exactly what I want to do.
I want a dog fight. I want to take it to him and, you know, just break him down. Got to shock the world again. I've got to, you know, this is it, the big league. My opportunity to take that baton from him, take the crown and, you know, slay the king, as I said, and, you know, make history.
We can speak to the former world champion at super middleweight level, George Groves. George, morning.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Thanks so much for speaking to us. You know, he's talking about Daniel Dubois saying this is the top level. You've been there. You've experienced it. 2014, 10 years ago, flipping heck, against Carl Froch. We were talking about it earlier, actually, George. And what a night that was. 80,000 fans that night at Wembley. What is your memory of being in the middle of that atmosphere?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it was the first of its kind. You know, there'd been the odd stadium fight, but, you know, you're talking about 15,000-20,000. This was 80,000. And there was no one to speak to, no one to say, what's it like? Like, what to expect? So when we, when you're about to prepare for your ring walk or such, you're trying to do your mental preparations. You're trying to envision what that feels like. But there's nothing else like it. So you come out and you want to absorb the crowd. You want to absorb the endless faces and iPhone cameras and everything else that's pointed at you. But, you've got a fight to concentrate on as well. I think, Anthony Joshua, it's not his first rodeo. You know, he's headlined, big stadiums, Wembley Stadium time and time again. But for Dubois, he's got some big time experience now. You know, he went to Poland and he fought Alexander Usyk, you know, in front of 60,000 Usyk fans. So I think, you know, it's going to be a big night for Daniel Dubois going in as the champion. He's going to have to hold his nerve and perform. So I think Joshua, when you listen to him talking about it, it's a mental battle just as much, if not more so, than a physical one. He might be right.
When he talks about a dog fight, you know, I'm just trying to think, what is the best way to disturb Anthony Joshua?
Well, they're both huge punchers. They've both got fantastic power. You know, they're both going to be wanting to land those big, heavy shots. And, you know, they've both been stopped before. And for any fighter, whenever they're preparing, they're trying to smell blood. They want to see if there's a weakness. And Dubois saying dogfight, in my opinion, the understanding is that it's like he sort of wants to make Joshua uncomfortable. Like, he wants to force the pace, maybe force the pressure, knowing that if he can get something to land and stick, Joshua will unravel. You know, that'll be where we've seen Joshua unravel before in the past. But we've also seen him, you know, start to unravel and then bring it back. You know, he's working with Ben Davison. He's got a new team now. He's in great form. So it's it's for every fighter's got to have their own plan. I think a dogfight, it doesn't really give too much away.
No.
Because it's like, well, I'm just going to go in there and have a tear up. I'm going to go in there and have a fight. We hope so.
You know?
I was at the press conference this week and, Frank Warren, Dubois' promoter was saying he thinks it's Hagler Hearns, which is one of the best fights in history. It lasts less than three rounds. So, I mean, as a promoter, you're always going to say, come and watch this. Yeah. It's a reenactment of one of the best fights ever. But, we do hope so because I think both guys want to start fast. And if they can start fast, and get their timing off, get their sort of ring gentlemanship in, get in their form and their stride, I should push the other guy out. And then when you land something heavy, you're going to look to capitalize on it.
Well, Hagler Hearns was the war, wasn't it? They talked about that was what they described that fight. That was more your division, though, wasn't it? Weight wise, George. I think it was middleweight, super middleweight.
Yeah, they were middleweights.
Middleweights. Yeah. I mean, that was unbelievable. I still watch that from time to time. It's still incredible. there was a time when Daniel Dubois had got a quitter tag, wasn't there? Which, I mean, when you look at it, it seems pretty unfair, actually, in hindsight, with the kind of injuries and fights he was up against. That's behind him. How much has he built up the necessary grit for what could be these kind of tough matches with all the pressure that goes with it, do you think?
I think he got a lot of criticism when he essentially pulled himself out against Joe Joyce a long time ago now. But it turns out he had a broken bone in his face, orbital bone was fractured. So, he kind of made the right decision. But as fighters, there is that element of, you have to go out on your shield and someone else has to be there to save you. He fights Alexander Usyk and he almost runs out of steam. He runs out of ideas and he gets stopped in that fight. And you're thinking, well, yeah, has he got it at that final stage? Has he got that ability to just grind it out? But I think since then, he's had some real good wins, obviously against Filip Hrgović to win what was then the interim belt that's been elevated. And then he's fought, big baby Miller, Jarrell Miller, who's, 350 pounds, throws 100 punches around. And so I think just that proof in the pudding from him to see that, he's hung with these good guys and kept the pace and sort of battled through a few dark moments. And from there, a fighter, they don't always need the exact proof. They just need the feeling of it. And the feeling now for Daniel Dubois is, I've overcome that. I am no longer labeled a quitter.
Yeah.
And I am now going to, never let that be the case.
All right. George, really good talking to you, George. Thanks very much for your time.
No problem.
Nice
Thank
one.
You.
Enjoy the fight. George Groves, former world champion at super middleweight. We have got the big fight for you live tonight on Five Live from 8:30. Anthony Joshua against Daniel Dubois. It's 7:56 now.
It's just a good tune, isn't it? To celebrate 85 years of Batman, cinemas across the UK are showing some of the film versions of the comic book hero, including Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy, which first came out in 2005. But we were wondering about that. Do people actually want to go and see those old classic films in the cinema, or do they just want to see new original films? Let's ask Phil Clapp, who's chief executive of the UK Cinema Association, represents all the big cinemas like Odeon, Vue, Cineworld, and Everyman. Phil, morning.
Good morning.
Are you excited? Were you dancing along to that very, very 60s theme tune?
Yeah, I'm of an age where I actually probably watched that first time around. I'm also a big fan of the Nolan trilogy as well, so it's a really good time to be a cinema fan, I think.
Now, a lot of cinemas do this, don't they? They put on reruns or re-releases at the cinema. It's always a bit of a blend. It's Batman this weekend, but you get Star Wars, Spider-Man, Halloween films, Christmas films. What does this do for the cinema? Is it nostalgia? Or is it just a way of kind of getting more bums on seats when there's not that many films out?
It's a bit of everything, to be honest. I mean, you just said the first Batman film from Nolan was 2005. So you'd have to be over 30 to have seen that legally in cinema now. And it seems quite recent, but actually,
Does
there's never ending, doesn't it? sadly. But there's a never-ending supply of those, you know, classic films that, you know, we forget the people who probably didn't have an opportunity to see on the big screen. So it does undoubtedly keep the box office ticking over when there aren't the big film, big new films. And we've had issues over the first half of this year and the back end of last year with the writers and actors strike. But actually during the pandemic, we saw there was an appetite, and it's increased since the pandemic, for people to come back and see classic films on the big screen. And, you know, it's a really important way of keeping people in that cinema going habit.
And how are cinemas doing since COVID? Because we know there's been lots of struggles, you know, some chains more than others. How's the business?
So it's been kind of slightly stop start. You know, during the pandemic, obviously, you know, films weren't being made, and so we had to wait for them to come back down the track. And then we were really hitting our stride last summer with, you know, Barbie and Oppenheimer and some really, really big numbers. And then, as I say, the writers and actors strike kind of stopped us in our tracks. And so it's only really in the last couple of months with Inside Out, Despicable Me, and Deadpool. And now we're into the real kind of meat of a great slate of films towards the end of the year. So we're still in recovery, but there's absolute confidence that we'll get back to the levels of cinema going we were seeing pre-pandemic and maybe exceed those.
Phil Clapp, Chief Executive of the UK Cinema Association, thank you so much. Yeah, that Barbenheimer moment last summer. Do you know what came after that? It was Paw Patrol and Saw, so it was Saw Patrol. Which I don't think, it didn't have the same oomph.
It works, doesn't it?
It works, somehow.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. It's Saturday morning and it's 5 Live Breakfast, the start of the weekend on 5 Live with Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton. And the headlines this morning, fears are growing of an all-out war in the Middle East. The UN political affairs chief, Rosemary DiCarlo, is warning the region is at a risk of a conflict that could dwarf the devastation witnessed in the region so far. He was speaking at a meeting of the Security Council discussing the deadly synchronized detonation of pagers and walkie-talkies used by Hezbollah. Francis Guy was a UK ambassador in Lebanon between 2006 and 2011.
The signs would be that they haven't wanted to escalate it. And if you think that behind them is Iran, who's calculating them as part of this, they also have not wanted to escalate it. It's in their interest to keep a pressure on. It's not in their interest to end up in all-out conflict. So they don't want it. But if you are endlessly being attacked, then there may come some point where you respond, unfortunately.
Hezbollah has confirmed that its senior military commander, Ibrahim Akil, was among those killed in Friday's Israeli airstrike on a building in the southern suburbs of Beirut.
A former manager of Fulham's women's football team, Gote Haugunes, says precautions were put in place to protect female players from Mohamed Al-Fayed when he owned the club. Mr. Al-Fayed, who died last year, has been accused of sexual assault by dozens of women who worked for Harrods. The department store says it's utterly appalled by the allegations.
Labour delegates a gathering in Liverpool for the party's conference, which starts tomorrow. Ahead of it, Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer and his most senior ministers will no longer accept donations to pay for their clothes. It follows criticism after it emerged he had received more than £16,000 for work clothing and glasses. Our political correspondent Helen Catt says ministers are hoping the conference will now be able to focus on policies.
This will be a celebratory conference to some degree. It's the first conference in government for a decade and a half. That will be within that recognition that there are, as they keep saying, difficult decisions to be made. We know there are tensions within the party about some of those decisions, like the winter fuel allowance, about things like the party's stance on Gaza. And it'll be interesting.